Welcome back. It's a Thursday, the 22nd day of June, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Call. And honestly, folks, in a nation and a world gone utterly insane, the biggest, well, call it a challenge that I face most days in trying to summarize the news in 25 minutes is just deciding which bit of insanity to begin with that's most representative of all the other stuff, from the insanely criminal to the criminally insane, and the real news as opposed to the, well, BS smoke and mirrors. So let's start with a brief review of just some of the stories from just one front in the war on sanity. This first one comes from Zachary Stiber via the Epoch Times, and it says that school administrators, says a so-called district judge, and since it's a far-left Obama appointee, the law obviously is immaterial, now we learn, so are facts. You know that he, she, or whatever they say must rule. The so-called judge ruled that school administrators were not infringing on a student's constitutional rights, and that part at least is obvious because, hey, they don't have any, when they ordered him to remove a shirt, saying, there are only two genders. So, yes, folks, that kind of speech is now verboten in American indoctrination cesspools. This was a case where a Massachusetts middle schooler named Liam Morrison and his lawyers said the order violated his First Amendment rights, yeah, again, you don't have any, to free speech, and his 14th Amendment rights to due process. And who are we kidding on that score? But U.S. District Judge Sik Indira Talwani said those violations basically cannot be proven because the school, quote, permissibly concluded that the shirt invades the rights of others. You see, you don't have any rights, but anybody else who objects does. So the boy can't wear a shirt proclaiming a simple, obvious, demonstrably scientifically provable truth in a so-called school where what's obvious and even what's true is no longer permitted. Said the Obama judge, school administrators appropriately exercise their discretion. Isn't that funny? They have discretion. Hunter Biden certainly has discretion, but you don't. When concluding that any such statement, quote, may communicate that only two gender identities, male and female, are valid, and any others are invalid or non-existent. And to conclude that students who identify differently, whether they do so openly or not, have a right to attend school without being confronted by messages attacking their identities, unquote. On the other hand, we'll attack your God, your intelligence, your ability to think anytime we blankety-blank and well feel like it. And remember, you don't have any rights. Now, at this point, folks, I have to admit, I read that, and I'm thinking, how about all those kids that attend schools where their identity, especially if they're white or actually male and are being taught that those things make them less than human even? Or for that matter, even if they just simply reject the BS that they're being fed. In other words, they dare to believe in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, or anything which is now verboten in a tyrannical police state. Isn't their identity being attacked every time they cross the threshold into that cesspool? Funny, isn't it, how what's good for the goose isn't good for the one whose goose is being cooked. Said Tyson Langhofer, senior counsel and director of the Center for Academic Freedom at the Alliance Defending Freedom, who's helping the plaintiff, said the ruling was disappointing because, quote, public school officials cannot censor a seventh grader's free speech by forcing him to remove a shirt that states a scientific fact, he said. Doing so is a gross violation of the First Amendment. We'll be appealing the ruling, and, well, I'll put it this way. Good luck, because the law doesn't seem to have much to do with it. Lawyer Hans Bader, commenting on the case, said that the judge suggested the T-shirt interfered with other students', quote, right to attend school without being confronted by messages attacking their identities, unquote. But other schools and other courts have refused to recognize a right to attend school without being confronted by messages attacking one's identity. Think about it, folks. That's the whole point of critical race theory. I guess I could go a step further and state the obvious on this score, too. Just about everything that's taught in the public indoctrination cesspools is attacking somebody's identity, their gender, that is, if they're either a real male or a real female, and certainly their religion, that is, if they believe there is a God and he wrote a book for us. Does anybody still believe there is any sanity anywhere in a legal system that now openly says that criminals like Hunter Biden, and ironically, even though he's white and even though he's a male, can do basically anything, especially things that you slaves, you peons, you will in fact go to jail and ultimately be executed if they feel like it for even attempting to do? But wait, you know what, folks? On that score, we're just getting started today. Here's another one from Zero Hedge. A federal judge has struck down an Arkansas law, and guess who appointed that federal judge? Barring child gender mutilation. But the lawsuit calls them transitions. The trailblazing Arkansas law was the first of 20 such measures enacted by what are now being called conservative, once they would have been called sane, legislatures across the country. And while similar laws in Alabama, Florida, and Indiana have been hit with only temporary injunctions so far, Judge, sick, James M. Moody, Jr. Oh, and guess who nominated him to the federal bench? Time's up, folks. And some still suggest he's the power behind the throne. Barack Hussein Obama issued a permanent injunction against the Arkansas law, handing a major victory to plaintiffs, I prefer the term groomers, led by the state's American Civil Liberties, sick, union chapter. The Obama tyrant's 80-page ruling makes clear he fully bought into the argument that children, especially minors, are well served by having their breasts removed, receiving puberty-blocking drugs, and otherwise having their immature bodies permanently, and in too many cases terminally altered, before reaching the age of majority. And he declared, quote, "The evidence showed that the prohibited medical care improves the mental health and well-being of patients." Full stop. It what? Says somebody who just made a pretty good case for being an out-and-out psychopath? Yeah, just like taking the Zyklon B injection improves your physical health. And the election was fair and honest, too. But hey, if you don't like it, I'll issue a red flag warning. Come take your guns and then your kids. Anyway, the evidence, said this scumbag, claims, showed, he says, that the prohibited medical care improves the mental health and well-being of patients, and that by prohibiting it, the state undermined the interests they claim to be advancing.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And he ruled that outlawing so-called gender-affirming care violated, and I didn't think this was possible, due process. Well, folks, when it comes to your right to freedom of assembly, speech, worship, to keep and bear arms, be free of illegal search and seizure, they don't care a blankety-blank about due process. But not only does outlawing gender-affirming care, whatever the hell they want to call it, do that, it also violates the equal protection rights of children. I guess that means they'll cut off little girls' breasts and little boys' penises with equal impunity. And that at least in this case, doctors have a First Amendment right, that is, if they want to groom kids. But I got a strong suspicion they don't have that same right when it comes to criticizing the vaccine schedule or suggesting that there might be a problem with destroying little kids' immune systems with the poison poke. He even claimed that the expert witnesses who testified for the state lacked the necessary qualifications because they have a struggle in the conflict between, quote, scientific understanding of the need for transgender care and faith. Which, if you stop and think about it, tells you a whole hell of a lot about this scumbag's faith. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders tweeted, "This is not care. It's activists pushing a political agenda at the expense of our kids and subjecting them to a permanent and harmful procedure. Only in the far left's woke vision of America is it not appropriate to protect children," unquote. And she added, "The Arkansas Attorney General will appeal the ruling." From there, a couple of related items on the blind to faith front. This ruling, says the Zero Hedge piece, comes a week after an 18-year-old California woman, hey, she's past the age of majority now, sued Kaiser Permanente and four different doctors for rushing her into a mastectomy at the age of 13, along with puberty blockers and testosterone treatments, in an effort to turn her, as it turns out, unsuccessfully, but hey, we knew that, didn't we, into a man. Kayla Loydahl said the doctor's high-pressure tactics, as she called them, included the use of a line that's now widely employed by practitioners in the field of child abuse and grooming, telling her parents, quote, "It's better to have a live son than a dead daughter," unquote. But turns out a lot of them are getting a dead they don't even know what. She said, quote, "The hardest part was being told something I believe was going to help me and make me feel better, only to do it and then come out on the other side not feeling any better," said Loydahl. "I could always have waited, but I can't undo it," unquote. One more current testimonial from a not-so-happy tranny. This one actually comes from the Daily Mail out of the UK, who writes in their headline, "It turned out to be a big mistake. Gen Z's trans poster child, Milo, from a 2016 MTV documentary, has reemerged, and now she tearfully regrets taking the hormone jabs and having a hairy belly and dead ovary. Milo said that being trans made her feel invincible back in that landmark MPV documentary, but that was then. Now she regrets her testosterone shots, breast removal, and hysterectomy. And she's returned with a YouTube post bitterly regretting a transition that's left her scarred, hairy, and almost certainly infertile. In the clip, which went online Wednesday, she said it turned out to be a big mistake. I keep thinking about how, if I ever want to be perceived by society as a woman, I now have to do vocal training, and I need laser treatment to get rid of my facial hair. But I'm just so tired. The Daily Mail, and as close as they get to a disclaimer here, said they can't verify Milo's account, but her story does echo those from the growing number of teens who speedily make, to put it mildly, folks, ill-conceived decisions, some would say under tremendous pressure, and I would agree, to change their so-called gender, and later they experience regret and medical problems, and yeah, a huge number of them end up committing suicide. But those are figures that you're not allowed to quote if you want to stay on two Facebook or various socialist media platforms. Says the Daily Mail, when Milo appeared in the MTV documentary, she became a poster child for a transgender movement that was, back then at least, new to most Americans, and not the hot-button political issue it is now. There's a lot more in the story, folks, but it's all just not only sad and disgusting and a huge warning to those who are being deceived in the name of this medical abomination, but it ought to make us downright angry. Finally, here's a story of a woman who seems to have every reason to be angry. A former teammate of transgender sick University of Pennsylvania swimmer, so-called Leah Thomas, has broken her mandated silence and spoke out this week about how that university silenced her and her teammates on the issue. Former swimmer Paula Scanlon told Fox Business host Stuart Varney that she was directed, octung, not to talk to the media about the issue, said a wrap-up of the interview by the Daily Caller. Scanlon told Varney, "Our university actually just didn't have any conversations with us at all about our concerns about the situation happening, and then once it was already a media storm and Thomas was already breaking all these records, that's when they came in and told us, please don't talk to the media. This is a non-negotiable, and they provided us with counseling services." Yeah, that's what they call coercion nowadays, folks. "If we objected," she said. Quote, "They brought in a whole panel of individuals, someone from the LGBT Center, someone from the psychological services, and a whole bunch of people from the athletic department," she continued. "The governing body of swimming called FINA, F-I-N-A, they actually put in a rule that said if you don't transition before the age of 12, you're not allowed to compete internationally. So in terms of Leah Thomas or another individual that's likely going to the Olympics, that's not going to happen. But in terms of the NCAA, well, the NCAA hasn't changed any of its policies regarding transgender individuals. It's about a year of testosterone blockers and hormone replacement therapy, and then you're good to go to compete on the woman's team," unquote. Scanlon says Zero Hedge's summary has joined a growing chorus of female athletes, specifically swimmers, who are now speaking out against having to compete against biological men in what was once a woman's sport. And it just gets worse. The story reminds us that back in April 2023, not too long ago, former University of Kentucky swimmer Riley Gaines was assaulted by a pro-trans crowd at a speech at San Francisco State University after she dared to speak up about having to compete against and share a locker room with biological males. Her husband, Lewis Barker, said she had to be barricaded in a room for nearly 3 hours to protect herself after that. She was hit by multiple, quote, "She told me," says her husband, "she was hit multiple times by a guy in a dress. I was shaking. It made me that mad. It makes me sick to feel so helpless about it. She was under police protection and was still hit by a man wearing a dress," unquote. And I gotta wonder, folks, is that called gender-affirming care? She wrote on Twitter after the incident, "The prisoners are running the asylum at SFSU. I was ambushed, physically hit twice by a man, which is proof," she said, "that women need sex-protected spaces." I think she's talking about locker rooms without things with penises in them. "Still," she wrote, "it only further assures me that I'm doing something right. When they want you silenced, speak louder." And amen. There were more bombshells from an increasingly and obviously incompetent and certainly impotent Congress on Wednesday. More bombshells, says the summary from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, from John Durham on Wednesday, where he told the House Judiciary Committee that the CIA knew full well that Hillary Clinton approved that plan to smear then-candidate Donald Trump with Russia, Russia, Russia allegations in order to distract from her own classified email scandal that really does rise to the level of certainly espionage, and given who was involved and how it's been used to make war on the American people, treason, and that the FBI did not, quote, sufficiently scrutinize information it received, nor did it, quote, apply the same standards to allegations it received about the Clinton and Trump campaigns, unquote. Added Durham, the FBI was all too willing to accept and use politically funded and uncorroborated opposition research, such as the Steele dossier, and he said the FBI relied on that dossier and FISA applications, knowing there was likely material originating from a political campaign or political opponent, unquote. And Durham said, now this is probably the only thing he said, folks, that kind of rises to the level of obscene humor. He said, quote, it's going to take some time to rebuild the public's confidence in the institution. Unquote. Like everybody who lived in this period will have to die, and then the history has to be rewritten before people are stupid enough to believe that the FBI was anything other than an evil SS Gestapo-like organization that we've seen so many police states descend into over countless repetitions in history. Under questioning from House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, Durham said that former FBI Director, scumbag and whoremeister chief Jim Comey withheld a referral memorandum from the agents working in the Crossfire Hurricane case. That memo contained intelligence from a high-level briefing with the director of the CIA, John I. Lie Through My Blankety-Blankin-Teeth Brennan, and it related to then-Democrat presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's attempt to tie Trump to Russia. Summarizing all of that, Jim Jordan said, they kept key intelligence from the investigators. This is how bad this investigation was, but here's the scary part. I don't think anything has changed, unquote. Among other things, Special Counsel Durham said that there was, quote, not a legitimate basis to launch the Operation Crossfire Hurricane investigation into Trump in response to an assertion about his reputation being damaged. Durham said, quote, my concern about my reputation is with the people who I respect and my family and my Lord, and I'm perfectly comfortable with my reputation with them, sir, unquote, he said to Cohen. And there was an interesting exchange that began with the most shiftless individual, scumbag without question, in the entire Congress. And that's a tall order, but yep, Adam Schiff for brains clearly comes pretty close to the top of that fetid heap. Here we go.
I'd like to yield the balance of my time to my colleague from California, Mr. Schiff.
Mr. Durham, DOJ policy provides that you don't speak about a pending investigation, and yet you did, didn't you?
I'm not exactly sure what
When the Inspector General issued a report saying that the investigation was properly predicated, you spoke out in violation of Department of Justice policy to criticize the Inspector General's conclusions, didn't you?
I issued a public statement. I didn't do it anonymously. I didn't do it through third persons.
But nonetheless, you violated department policy by issuing a statement while your investigation was ongoing, didn't you?
I don't know that. If I did, then I did, but I was not aware that I was violating some policy.
And you also sought to get the Inspector General to change his conclusion, did you not? When he was concluding that the investigation was properly predicated, did you privately seek to intervene to change that conclusion?
This is outside the scope of the report, but if you want to go there, we asked the Inspector General to take a look at the intelligence that's included in the classified appendix that you looked at, and said that that ought to affect portions of his report.
And you thought it was appropriate for you to intervene with an independent investigation by the Inspector General because he was reaching a conclusion you disagreed with. You thought that was appropriate.
That's not the premise isn't right. The Inspector General circulated a draft memo to a number of agencies and persons. Our group was one of them. We were asked to review that draft and bring to his attention any concerns that we had or disagreements.
And when he refused to change his report, you violated
Mr. Chairman, I insist on regular order.
Well, it's not even his time. It's Ms. Lofgren's time. So the gentleman yields back to Ms. Lofgren, who's not here, so the time has expired. Mr. Durham, in the summer of 2016, did our government receive intelligence that suggested Secretary Clinton had approved a plan to tie President Trump to Russia?
Yes.
Was that intelligence important enough for Director Brennan to go brief the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, and the Director of the FBI?
Yes.
And was that intelligence put then into a memorandum, a referral memorandum?
Yes.
And was that memorandum then given to Director Comey and Agent Strzok?
That's who it was addressed to, yes.
Did Director Comey share that memorandum with the FISA court?
Did
he share that memorandum with the FISA court? Did Director Comey do that?
I'm not aware of that, if he did.
Did he share it with the lawyers preparing the FISA application?
Not to my knowledge.
Did he share it with the agents on the case working the Crossfire Hurricane case?
No.
Didn't share it with the agents on the case. Can you tell the committee what happened when you took that referral memo and shared it with one of those agents, specifically Supervisory Special Agent Number 1?
We interviewed the first supervisor of the Crossfire investigation, the operational person. We showed him the intelligence information. He indicated he had never seen it before. He immediately became emotional, got up and left the room with his lawyer, spent some time in the hallway, came back.
He was ticked off, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was ticked off because this is something he should have had as an agent on the case. It's important information that the director of the FBI kept from the people doing the investigation.
The information was kept from him.
There are a couple of loud notes on the World War III front today. One of them says two massive explosions have been reported on Crimea near the city of Sevastopol. The Daily Mail coverage, speaking evidently about the same incident, says Ukraine has used a British-supplied Storm Shadow missile to hit a key bridge between Crimea and Russian-held parts of the Kherson region in Ukraine, said pro-Moscow sources. Vladimir Saldo, the region's governor, said that Storm Shadow long-range cruise missiles were likely used for the attack, which damaged the road on the Changar Bridge, although no casualties have been reported. This strike comes just 2 days after the Kremlin warned that it would see the UK as a, quote, full-fledged participant in the war in Ukraine if Storm Shadow missiles hit Crimea, which was annexed by Russia back in 2014. And in what's probably a related story, in this case from the Sun out of the UK, but addressed to the United States, Vladimir Putin has vowed to deploy his hypersonic Satan II, as they call it. The Russians call it a Sarmat, nuclear-capable ICBM, in what they refer to as a chilling new threat to the West. Actually, folks, it's an old threat. They're just reminding people about it again. Because the new generations of the Sarmat ICBM are thought to be the world's most powerful and are intended to be deployed real soon now for combat duty. The new 208-ton hypersonic Satan II or Sarmat rocket measures 116 feet in length and can be loaded with up to 15 independent targetable nuclear warheads at once. And says the piece from the Brits, it has the potential to obliterate the United Kingdom some 1,600 miles away in just 6 minutes. And it has an operational range of up to 11,180 miles, and the deadly missile simply has no competition from anything in the West. Well, after all of that, we do have to go to this story, at least briefly, courtesy of the Criminally Negligent Network, which says, guess what, folks? House Speaker for the Traitors, Kevin McCarthy, urged House Republicans to vote against a resolution brought forward by GOP Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado to force a vote to impeach the scumbag who's trying to push the United States not only over the cliff, but an escalation of World War III into the nuclear and terminal phase, Joe Biden. He argued that now is not the time, said multiple sources concerning the closed-door meeting to CNN. Kind of inclines your host to ask the question, well, gee, when is the right time? After we see the nukes? Or maybe after the communist Chinese come out and say, yeah, we own that puppet, he's our guy on a stick, and by the way, Hunter's our man too, and how dare you put any of them behind bars for just doing what we've paid them to? Come on, folks, what is it going to take? I guess that's the real question here. In his wrap-up, Matt Taibbi asked a few pointed questions of Durham that didn't get asked by Congress. Why were former FBI Director James Comey and Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, along with FBI officials Bill Priestap, Peter Strzok, and Kevin Kleinsmith, and others, allowed to refuse to cooperate? And where's MIFSD? And while we're on the subject, why were omissions or outright misstatements by FBI officials and their CHSs treated as, misstatements and not criminal perjury or lying, as would almost certainly have happened with, say, Robert Mueller and his so-called investigation? Yeah, folks, a little bit of the truth, way late is finally coming out, which only shows us just how incredibly, unbelievably serious, treasonous the lies, cover-ups, and acts of war against the American people actually, well, still are. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.